Mr. Whittaker, Reel 4. The next thing, you were telling me about the layers test, which I believe you failed. What was it you were telling me?
Yes, this was the test for gun layers, which is the obviously the most important job on the gun. It involved setting the dial sight to an angle given by the gun position officer. You either picked up an aiming post or point, convenient tree, church, spire or something, and set off the angle against it. Or they'd put out a couple of aiming posts which you carried on the gun if there wasn't anything available, and just set the thing. But it had to be done quiet. They'd only allow you a few seconds, and then they'd come round and examine it to see that it was on the right angle. But I'd only had a, you know, when the others had let me have a go. I've completely forgotten whether the others, how many of the others passed, but they put everybody on just as to let everybody have a go at it.
But most of the others would have practiced it more regularly.
They'd have practiced it more regularly.
You were still being rude, but the baby of the team.
Yes, yes. Although they had announced sometime during what I was at Ragby, they'd said that it was their opinion that I could be let out on my own, which I was. Thought was pretty decent of them.
Now, I think while you were there, you did start some signal training.
When I was there...
How did that come about?
They called us all together and gave us a big... They said that certain of us, that the signallers were... The regiment was being brought up to strength, which meant we were going to get a load of these lads from the militia. But they pointed out that signalling was very important, the most important job in the battery. They weren't selling it to us, of course, and some of us were going to volunteer for it, which is, that's unfair. They did say, you've been chosen to go, and I was one of them. And I believe, at the time, Fred Langford. The others, I'm not certain whether Dave Tickler was another of our buddies. Certainly Spud Baker, and with them we'd collected Jeff Williams. Don't quite know how, but they were definitely staying on the guns. But I'm almost certain that Fred and I, and probably Dave, were selected to go onto the signallers.
Do you know what they were looking for in the signaller?
Well, they told us we were looking for the most intelligent people in the troop. Rotten liars, which is literally, they said, oh, you know, you want to. But they did actually pick, they did make some quite, although I say so, they did make some quite shrewd moves. Some of the people I met there, who I got to know very well later on, moved, who I hadn't known before. Dennis Middleton became a good friend of mine. Ted Coop. Several of them moved, as I say, but I don't know if they all, but certainly they eventually all got into the signal section, where Jackie Gore was the signal sergeant.
And what was he like?
A great soldier. A terrible bloke, really, but he was a really good... He wanted the signalers to be... You'd got to be a bit better than the guards to suit Jack, and you'd got to... And the signalling, he wanted it... Morse code, semaphore, everything he wanted. He was determined it was going to be the best section in the regiment, you know, 425 signal group, because then, of course, you were signallers, and they, whichever troop you went to was immaterial, really. And I liked it. I found it was...
You said, while we're on him, you said he was a terrible man, though. What was terrible
about
him?
Oh, I must admit, later on I found when I say terrible, he had a sense of humour which later became rather similar to my own, you know. He had a real wicked sense of humour. Later on he played some awful tricks on me when I'd forgotten what I'd tried to do to him, but he was the sergeant, so I could never win. But he'd drill you like mad, you know, and he'd have you doubling for, you know, just for sheer devilment. He really was a right lad. When we got our own back on him once or twice, we moved out of Ragby as signal up to some hall, which I've forgotten the name of, about a mile or so out of the
Would
village.
That be Planton Hall?
I don't think so. I can't remember. Might have even been Ragby, I don't know. But they had this road just opposite, and one day when he was on with one of his, and he was shouting, about turn, and we'd arranged that we wouldn't hear him. Had his own back, though, and let us march about a mile up the road before he was that sort of chap, you know. He caught on quickly. But he was I had a lot of time for Jack. I could appreciate what he was trying to do.
And how did he start you on learning signals? What's the first thing you had to learn?
The first thing was telling us where the signal is fitted in, how important it was, you know, getting messages down from the OP and pointing out on the blackboard, you know, the gun position telephones and the linkages to command post, things like that. And then telephone, the first thing was telephone procedure.
And what's telephone procedure? I mean, what was
well,
it
you
then?
Had to, well, you had to, the main thing was learning that, you know, repeating, a lot of it was repeating, simply repeating orders.
So you know,
and passing on, and passing on. They had a set, I've forgotten the things now, but for instance, from the OP you'd get a set series of orders, and it was very useful to know what order they were coming down in. You know, range, line, I've forgotten it. But at one time I could have, you know, done it in my sleep. And so as it came down, say the OP man had forgotten one, you could shout back to him, range or whatever, you see. And things, just general
orders.
Telephone, fire orders. And, of course, other orders from the command post, you know.
And you would, if you got an order over the phone, you'd always repeat it back.
You'd always repeat it.
So that they could check you'd got it.
They could check you'd got it, as well as the chap who you were shouting it, who was standing next to you listening. And learning Morse code.
Would the Morse be used over the telephone, or
it could be, but it was used mainly on what we then called it was wireless. Then, you know, we didn't say radio. We didn't go. We got on to. I don't think we did wireless in England, in fact. But I know certain we started on the Morse code with little keys, you know, and we'd sit opposite one another. And
did you find it difficult to learn the Morse code?
I did rather.
Was it just repetition?
Repetition, yes. Yeah. It's not terribly, you know, once you get into it, I can still recognise a few things when I hear them, but it was simple repetition.
And that's as far as you got in it. Had you been introduced, you mentioned semaphore, would he have you on that in England?
Yes, we did a bit of that with the flags. That was quite interesting. All seemed a bit, some of it seemed a bit pointless to us, you know. But
in what way?
Well, you thought who'd want flags when you were going to be miles away from the guns, you know, and that sort of thing.
But
it was all, you know, it was. I know to me it became more. It was more interesting, really, than just someone shouting, you know, halt action front and dropping the gun into action and passing a dummy shell up.
So you felt that you were making more of yourself?
I felt that it was a. You know, I fell for it, whatever they'd. But it was. It did suit me better, I think. It was a. I think maybe I thought, oh, guns, you know, it was a case of pointing it, fire it, and that was it, always doing what somebody else was. Whereas with the signals, and the thing I've always liked, you felt more in the thick of things, you know, you were more with the, if you're at the OP, you've got an officer there, and you're, even if you're only drilling, you felt that you knew what was going off.
Yeah. At this stage of learning signals, would you have practiced being at OPs and things, or were you just purely theoretical?
Purely purely theoretical, and occasionally when they'd go out on exercises and the usual thing, you'd be on a gun position. And of course you're practicing the great thing with signals, reeling out wire, which was the we had a lorry with a big drum mounted on it, which the South Knots had patented. They weren't satisfied with the issue things, and they'd got a reel that held about three times as much wire as the Army issue. So you reel out wire, you know, and in other words, getting your telephone lines out, practicing, tying knots. That was the other thing you had to learn, tying knots, because telephone lines, when you've not got enough line, you have to join two. You know, if you've got half a mile, you'd join them. You had to reef knot you used, which meant bearing the wire and taping it up and being able to do it in the dark.
And that's also presumably how you'd repair a wire if it.
That's how
cut.
You'd repair a wire if it had been, because they did get, as we found out later, they did get vehicles going over them and break them.
Did you learn how to lift the wire over roads with, I mean, at that stage? Or
no, we did try. But mainly for amusement, we did try the pole climbing things you fix to your legs with the spikes in. But that was more, I think that was more regarded as a bit of a lark, though, more than a thing. It was mainly, our main thing was getting the wire on the ground there. Whether you came to streams and rivers, never, I don't think we got, things like that didn't bother us. And roads, we avoided them.
Anything else about your signal training in this country? And rugby?
Not particular. I think it was mainly the very basic.
You were just starting?
Just starting, yeah. And of course it gave you, as I say, it gave me a lot more insight into the way the regiment worked.
What about, did you have a signal officer? Or was it just Gore in charge of the group?
Can't remember a signal officer, but it was mainly Jack Gore. He was the acknowledged signal expert in 425.
Yeah.
He was the signal sergeant, and each troop, he was a full sergeant, and I think each troop had a signal sergeant who was a lance sergeant. Then they'd have bombardiers. I've forgotten just how they fitted in.
So
I've forgotten, I don't know, a troop, but troops at that time didn't bother us too much because we hadn't been allocated to...
You were out of the troop system.
I was out of the troop system for a time. We weren't allocated to a...
So you'd be attached to headquarters then?
I was attached to the battery headquarters. Now, he was training, as far as I can remember, he was training us all together. You know, those who'd been signallers and those who are like newcomers.
Now, what about the in January, round about the 18th of January, you went off to Palestine.
Yeah.
When did you get your first notice that you were going overseas? Roughly, I mean, did you get much?
I did. Opposite where my folks lived, opposite there, was a brigadier who worked at the Chilwell Ordnance Depot. And he told my father that we were going to Palestine, but keep it under your hat. And he told him that while we were at Rugby and before we knew. And I think on a weekend, I went home for a weekend and said we should be moving in January. And my father said, yes, I know, you're going to Haifa. So I said, oh, great. Of course, I kept it under my hat, more or less. The word had begun to go round, but I think, of course, my folks were delighted because the... You know, my father didn't fancy France very much after his experiences, and he had a shrewd idea when the Germans got going. I think he was thinking of the old trench warfare. But anyway, so I got quite a lot of notice of this move.
Were you kitted out specially for
No. Whilst we're at Rugby, we did get our battle dress, as distinct from the old, you know, we'd live mostly in our overalls. But we did get the battle dress as distinct from the old brass buttons and, you know, we got the blouse and we got the battle dress issued.
What did you think of battle dress when it was issued? Did you like it? Or?
I thought it was more comfortable to work in, but it was a bit of a come down to go out in. And the thing I always regretted was my British warm, big Royal Horse Artillery. We had short, we didn't have the long great coats. We had things with white fleecy linings, you know, knee length, beautiful overcoats, double breasted, you know, collar fitted up. They were, and they took those from us.
What were you given instead?
A long infantry greatcoat with pleats in the back.
Just a standard one?
Yeah. Of course, I should confess, my British woman did put in my kit bag, and the last I saw of it was in store in Cairo, and who stole it? I went there on a leave, and it had gone, despite my lock not being touched. But I was never very good at scrounging, I must admit. But I would have liked to have made. But that battle dress was quite, if you had to, you know, it wasn't very smart, but it was pretty comfortable.
You still would have your overalls for...
Oh, yes, you still had overalls, which were shapeless.
What about any other kit? Did you get anything special issued?
Not to go abroad, I don't think.
Now, what do you remember about the journey? Because it's a fair old journey, isn't it?
Journey that, yes, I know it was bitterly cold. We had a tremendously cold winter. And in the middle of it, I had leave. I went on leave before Christmas, so I had Christmas at Ragby, which, by the way, was very good. They looked after us really well. Only thing I resented, I was made batman to Captain Shakespeare and Lieutenant Neil, which I did not enjoy one bit.
Why not?
Well, I hated being somebody's having to... Good morning, sir. Your tea, sir. Oh, dear, I really resented that. But it did have one big thing, that at night I could go and see that the hot water bottles were in. And I think I'd got a girlfriend in Ragby by then, but it wasn't she who lived near there where the office, but her friend lived there. So it gave me a good excuse for being out late at night. You were supposed to be in barracks by a certain time, but I used to, batman sergeant.
Did a lot of the men find girlfriends in Ragby?
Quite a few. But they were very hospitable. Used to go out. Little Dark Teddy, one of the posh girls in the neighbourhood, called me.
Little
Dark Teddy. She was a nice girl, but she always had this, always goaded me with this. Had a beautiful house. They were very well-to-do people. But she used to invite me over to, with a bunch of others, and we used to go and have dinner there, and, you know, quite elegant dinners. But
why Little Dark Teddy? I'm
not... I've never been very big, and I had really dark hair at that time. But anyway, that was the batman part I hated. I really did. I thought, I haven't come into the army to be. But anyway, it only lasted for a couple of days. Yes, then we. Came this cold winter's day, and we loaded the guns up and off we went.
Was there any sort of a send-off from the local civilian, you know, that your friends?
Tearful ones. But we loaded up at night, and we set off quite late at night. But there were some came down to see us. Quite a lot came down to see us off. I can remember the part of the journey. I can remember... some vague blue lights, and stuck my head out the window and shouted to somebody passing, "Where is it?" He says, "Victoria, Nottingham, mate." We went through Nottingham, and next morning when we woke up, Winchester were passing through. So I said, "Oh, it was." So we said, "At least it was Southampton." And we finished up at Southampton, stayed there all day, and curious thing, the ship we sailed on, year before, I'd been on a cycling tour in Norfolk. We'd been to Harwich, this friend of mine, John, who incidentally he didn't join the South Knots. And we got a pass to the harbour. And they said, you can look over whatever's in. And they gave it on this pass, it said SS Vienna. And it wasn't SS Vienna, it was Amsterdam that was in. But I saw Vienna because that's the one we went on across the channel.
What do you remember about the journey?
I bet I'm one of the only South Knots who can remember it. As far as I can remember, I was determined. Nearly everybody went and bedded down, but I wanted to be there when we sailed. So I went and stood by the, put my things in the saloon or wherever, and we went out in the dark deck. And we went down, and there were a few odd little lights in Southampton Water. There was this big dark, I can remember, as we did the left hand down a bit, which I've come to know very well since, at the bottom, around the Isle of Wight, you know, there was a big dark shape really close to us. I'd just make out this was a destroyer, picked us up there. A few odd lights. But then we went round the Nab Tower, right hand down, and I was sick straight away. Immediately and absolutely like that. 1 minute I was standing there, you know, wind and everything. And the first time this boat pitched, I'd gone. And I spent the rest of the night. I'd just about recovered when dawn broke and we got into Cherbourg. I was as sick as the proverbial, and the sea wasn't even rough. And I think there were only about three, as far as I can remember, there were two others who spent the night with me miserably on this rail. And I don't think they were South Knots, I've forgotten. But I know one was me. Oh, I was.
So nobody else much got seasick.
Nobody else was. They laughed the socks off at me. I really was ill.
Had you ever been on a ship before?
No. But it was the first. I know we'd gone round, and because I remember as we turned, one of the crewmen came past and said hello, and I said, "Where are we?" Till then, I'd never heard it, and he just said, "The Nab." Later on, of course, I know where it, you know, they all go round there on the.
And this was on the Amsterdam?
Or the Vienna, I think. Does it say Amsterdam?
It says Amsterdam in your notes, in your history, yeah.
Well, I must have got it the wrong way. I know whichever it was, there you are, you see. Whichever ship was in, I got on the one I'd got the pass for. I got on it at Southampton.
Now, what about the train journey across France?
Marvellous, wonderful. When we landed at Cherbourg, that was when I really began to feel I was in the army there. You know, they issued us with woodbines. We got fed out of soup kitchens. Oh, it was the real thing, you know, standing smoking on Cherbourg Harbour. They let us out for an hour or two in the evening, where we hastily tried to get hold of some French-speaking, you know, our better-educated friends. Then we got on the train. First morning, I don't know what time we left. I love the locomotives. First time I was always a bit train, you know, I was a train spotter. We finished up at Le Mans, which I'd heard of, 24-hour race, you know, Bentleys and things in my day. Got out to fill my water bottle, and some Frenchmen said, you know, Entente Cordiale or whatever, and they showed me where to fill it. And then they said, Duvan, which I knew was wine, had a, oh dear, that was their, you know, they drank this red wine. I thought they'd poisoned me. But anyway, but the next night, we travelled all day, and the next night we went over the, what is it, the Central Massif, I think they call it. And it was beautiful. I stayed up all night. The scenes were spectacular. Snow, mountains, you know, the tracks had been dug out at times. And as it climbed, and then little stations with and trees. And the next morning, of course, as day broke, we were in a completely different country. To me, it looked like all the pictures I'd ever seen of Mexico and Spain. All, you know, pretty pink houses and palm trees and cactus and all sorts of things. Then eventually the Mediterranean, where it was so blue that it was impossible.
Now,
and so to Marseille, but it was, I can always remember that journey.
Now, you have very different memories. You have a positive memory of that journey. A lot of people found it very uncomfortable, and a lot of them were ill, apparently. It was sore throats and things. Were you aware of that going on as well?
Yeah, the train was, there were hard seats. I can remember they didn't feed us badly though. I think they brought chocolate and stuff round and drinks. But as I say, I was so interested that I spent most of the time looking out of the. But the trains were uncomfortable. They jolted and banged and.
But you enjoyed
But
it.
I enjoyed the views. As I say, I can always remember those snow, you know, particularly this going through this over this mountain range, and the next day seeing the. You know, the first sight of this Mediterranean bay was, I thought, the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen.
Now you didn't stop long at Marseille, did you? You went
No,
almost straight through.
we got on, we went on and boarded the Devonshire. And
And
that's where I got my own back. We got on at night, and the night was again, it was absolutely, I can always remember that. The moon rose just after we'd sailed, and somebody told us, you know, it was a Monte Carlo's island we were passing, and the moon rose, and there was this big white path, you know, perfect Mediterranean night. And the following morning, there was a howling storm, the ship was pitching and rolling, and there were two of us went to breakfast, and I was one of them.
so what had happened? Why no seasickness? You just got rid of it.
I'd got rid of it.
Have you ever had it since?
Yes, when we went from Tripoli to, I've
So.
not been on the sea since, but when we went from Tripoli to Naples, then I was
So
sick.
with you, seasickness, you either get it or you don't.
Well, I'd got over it then, you see. All the others, they're in these hammocks, and we were doing the classic, you know, going round one or two of anybody for bacon and eggs, and it was a tr I didn't know that. I always had this idea the Mediterranean never had storms. The old ship was rolling, you know, raved. Oh, it was. But I can always remember going down, I think about, forget about 25 people to these tables. And there was, you had to go and fetch this stuff. And we went and fetched the lot. But dishes of tea and bacon and ate till we couldn't eat any more.
Do you remember the boat inspections?
Yes, they had.
What were they? There's a story here about Shakespeare and his troupe, but I suppose you weren't with him then.
No, I was with things, but the.
What was a boat inspection? Boat station, sorry.
Oh, they used to have. They assigned you stations to go to, you know, in case of trouble. You had to double up from wherever you were to your assigned station. But it was. Far as I can remember, nobody took it ever so seriously.
Now, one thing I just want to make, you didn't have your guns or your equipment with you, did you?
No, oh no, that's another story, isn't it? We'd just got personnel on the ship.
So you
The
didn't
guns
have.
had been loaded. The guns had been loaded on another ship.
Right, and your signalling equipment, I presume, was with it, them as well.
Everything had gone. But the other, th I did get a spell of. I did get a spell where I went up on the bridge, submarine spotting, guard
What
duty.
did that involve?
Well, I went up there and there were all these people with big brass rings and were very friendly. Who are you? Where do you come from? And they said, "Well, go and stand over there." And I stood on one. And I said, "What do I do?" They said, "Well, you look. You know, they were really took it out. Or you look for a big long thing stick." I said, "Well, how do I know if it's?" He said, "You'll know, mate." It was only a few hours, you know, but it passed time. But of course, it was beautiful and sunny. You know, we'd gone from. Cold into a beautiful sunny Mediterranean.
Were you aware? I mean, they had the first case of meningitis. It was a bit of a problem with the South Knots, wasn't it? Were you aware of the meningitis
Not
problem?
till we got into Pal not till we'd been in Palestine.